Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. I'm up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio on the magical Isle of Vashon once more. And it is not only Holy Week, it is Passover, and it is a time for reflection and a time for all of us, regardless of our religious conviction or lack thereof, to take half an hour with your captain and talk about some things which are important to me, and therefore I am certain they are important to you as well. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who have contributed financially to the support of the Voice of Vashon. This comes up today because last night I was in a meeting of all of the people who produce programs, and the subject came up of those who contribute financially, those who contribute in other ways, and not to put too fine a point on it, those who do not. The acknowledgement from Amanda, who is the title now is general manager, not executive director, is the new general manager. The acknowledgement from Amanda of the both financial contributions and the fact that all of you who do contribute financially tell the Voice of Vashon that you are in support of keeping Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, and her remarks were both gracious and fulsome. And from that, I was reminded that the program From the Captain's Chair with your captain up in the chair is the only one of all of the programs on the Voice of Vashon. I don't know how many there are, but maybe 50 or 60 producers. That we know where some money comes from, and we know who is listening because you tell us. You tell me, you tell now the general manager, and when I put out the call for some financial help, I know that all hands will be on deck for that, and my request is that you also key it and tie it to keeping your captain up in the captain's chair so that we can continue to have this half hour together every week. The binnacle list this week came to me with a couple of unexpected and unwelcome reports. Our friend John, J-O-N, who is one of our historians in the Great Lakes, and who furnishes me with the ice reports for the Great Lakes, had a great loss in his family. His wife, Karen, was rear-ended in a collision while she was out and about on a mission for the family. Her little car is totaled. Karen is, I think, going to be all right, but of course we still have to go through a few days to see whether or not whether there's any damage that needs further treatment. This reminds us, this is a good reminder to all of us, that although the binnacle list mostly reports people who are on the binnacle list because of physical, mental, emotional, or financial reasons, that sometimes an accident, an unexpected, and this one certainly was that, happens, and all of a sudden, one of our much-loved people is in the hospital as a result of some untoward event. Along with Karen, there are several of Captain Joe's people that are known to me who are awaiting laboratory results or MRIs or CAT scans. My Amsterdam family includes one of them, and I am hopeful for a report on that soon. My friend, who is the world-renowned and published marine biologist, the world's greatest expert on marine mammals, I'm awaiting a report from him as to what is going on with what looks to me to be a pretty serious cancer diagnosis. So all of these things are weighing heavily on your captain, because they always weigh heavily on me. And as I continue to accumulate chronological years, more and more of my people cross their own bars. I don't have any of those to report this week after reporting the crossing of his bar, or whatever infantry, straight leg infantry brigadiers call it in the Army, about my friend General Joe. I don't have any of those to report today. For that, I am very grateful. But it won't be long before the next one comes in. And that is the price that I have to pay for having a long life. So all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list are now the recipients of the concentrated energy that comes from all of us to all of you. All of you are in the palm of my hand. Follow the instructions of your medical practitioner so that soon you will return to full duty. In my own case, it continues to be steady as she goes. Keep her so. I had a couple of days last week where I was not at the fullness of my form, but I have come to expect that those happen every so often, and I am trying to figure out ways to mitigate that, because I just have too much to do. I have places to go and people to see. Important things yet to do before it is time for me to write the night orders for the last time. Last week, on the 29th of March, it was Vietnam Veterans Day. And I should have last week, but I was deployed last week. I broadcast last week from a conference. Parenthetical insertion here. During the lunch break, I was out on the deck, and I saw the ex-IVIC. I still cannot call her Storis. Ex-IVIC was underway out in Elliott Bay, and there being a merciful God in his heaven and hopefully a captain who knew what he was doing, there were no tugs hanging around her. I don't know whether she was getting underway for the Arctic. I hope she was. I hope that she was about her father's business. That's why we bought her. As inept as I believe she's going to be in any kind of hard ice. But she was at least underway. And she was at least underway with no tugs hanging around fouling her paintwork. So last week I broadcast from that conference. It was a conference in which I believe that I made some small contribution. And so here I am back with you. And so last week, when I should have said something about the forthcoming Vietnam Veterans Day, I'm doing it in retrospect today. So that takes me to my book today. It is called The Coast Guard at War, Vietnam 1965 to 1975, and it was written by Captain Alex Larzelier. I took out my copy and I opened it up to the flyleaf, thinking that maybe Captain Larzelier had written in it for me. He and I went to the same high school in Washington, D.C. He is a number of classes behind me at the Coast Guard Academy. And instead of an inscription from him was one from one of my dearest friends, Karin, from Germany, who was married to a retired Air Force colonel. And she had brought the book with her, and she had written in it when she and Walt, her husband, who had flown the China Hump in C-46 commando aircraft, Curtiss C-46 aircraft. He'd been shot down by the Japanese. He held the Distinguished Flying Cross. And Karin and Walt had stayed with us in Cambridge, and she had brought the book with her and had delivered it as a thank you gift when she and Walt were staying with us in Cambridge. My best friend, with love and affection, Karin. That took me back to many, many memories. But it also took me back to thinking about Captain Larzelier. He wrote this book to capture the story of all of us. So I went into the index thinking that I would see emblazoned there in the index in gold letters the name of my own Ingham. And not only is she not listed among the ships in the story, in the index, but in going into the section that dealt with Squadron 3, I do not see her name listed. But I maybe need to read the chapter a little bit more carefully. I can't believe that he left her out with two presidential unit citations. In any case, the book is highly recommended. Let me tell you a little bit about Captain Larzelier. He not only is a graduate of the Coast Guard Academy, a number of years behind me, but he is a graduate of the Naval War College, the National War College, and he was a first Coast Guard aide to the president from 1971 to 1973. He commanded two of the 82-foot patrol boats in Vietnam, Point Comfort and Point Bank. He commanded five Coast Guard cutters. I've got him there with six. But he was not selected for flag. Interesting phenomenon there. Wonder what the story is there. I know why I was never selected for flag. We could have one whole broadcast on that. And I can think of a number of reasons why a selection board would not select me for flag. I can think of a number of reasons for that. But it didn't happen. And instead, I was given the privilege of commanding Coast Guard people in seven commands, six afloat and one ashore, and was the ICE boss for Commandant Jim Gracie, and was the chief of operations here in the 13th Coast Guard District, now called something else. And I've got absolutely no regrets about any of that. Probably the service made a good choice in not selecting your captain for flag. But I come into the second half of my life, what is arguably the second half of my life, with honors and the respect and regard of many people. I know flag officers. I have known of flag officers who commanded almost nothing, have almost no sea time, no command time at all, and therefore did not have the same privileges of command at sea of the wonderful people that I was privileged to command that I have had. My magazine today, so anyway, the book is The Coast Guard at War, Vietnam, 1965 to 1975. It's by Captain Alex Larzelier. It is published by the Naval Institute Press, the premier press, publication press for sea service people. I highly recommend it, but I will also tell you that Ingham is not in it. My captain in Ingham is not in it. The two presidential unit citations are not in it. So it comes to you with, let us say, a somewhat reserved recommendation. My magazine this week is the Keeper's Log, the Journal of the U.S. Lighthouse Society. What a wonderful issue this one is. And it the article that I am recommending is that it has to do with a life-saving service keeper, Dunbar Davis. Spent 55 consecutive hours without sleep, food, or water while responding to five different wrecks, one after the other. Dunbar Davis had just turned 50 years old 2 months prior. Considered over the hill then. Wow. No wonder people ask me if I am over the hill, over the horizon. In fact, Davis had already outlived a man's life expectancy for the time by several years. The Dunbar Davis was the station keeper of Oak Island Life Saving Station. And the life saving service was brought into what became the Coast Guard from the Revenue Cutter Service in 1915. It's a wonderful, wonderful article. It has photographs that will just grab everybody who has ever been in the business of rescue at sea. It is also has a number of articles about lighthouses, as one would imagine, for the Keeper's Log of the Journal of the U.S. Lighthouse Society. And many of the photographs in this particular issue are by Eleanor Dwyer. Now, Eleanor is one of the world's authorities on lighthouses. She and her husband, John, parenthetical insertion here, John is a retired Navy submariner. And they lived here on the Magical Isle for many years. Their daughter, Jessica, still lives here. And Eleanor and I had frequent conversations about the next books that she would produce. And I always tried to get her to do one about Great Lakes lighthouses because there are so many really great ones on the Great Lakes, and many of them still have their Fresnel lenses. And Michigan has more lighthouses than any other state in the Union. When I was the commander in Sault Ste. Marie, I had many, many lighthouses, and we were automating them at the time. So many of Eleanor's photographs are in this particular issue of the Keeper's Log, and it is the Journal of the U.S. Lighthouse Society. And there are people who are lighthouse collectors. They come to me when I'm doing my tours out at Point Robinson Light with their passports. And in that passport, I put the stamp that they can only get at Point Robinson. And I also give them a poster of all of the Washington lighthouses. And this poster was a gift to me from Eleanor Dwyer. And the right to reproduce it and to give it away. It is the only place in the world that you can get that poster. It is the only place in the world where you can get that stamp. And it is the only place in the world, of course, where you get Captain Joe. So I start my regular tour season this year on Mother's Day in May, and also that will be Kite Day at Point Robinson, and that will be the first day of my regular tour season. This year, I have my friend, young friend Kelly, who did his community service in order to graduate high school here on the island. He did his community service by coming out and working with me at the lighthouse. I taught him how to give the tours. He moved off island when he went to university. He's now come back with his lovely lady. And we are going to divide up the tour giving on Sunday because I have a very ambitious travel schedule. To get back briefly to Vietnam Veterans Day and the book, I urge anyone who is interested in this to read the book, but I also recognize today all of those who served. Alex, in his book, says that there were about 8,000 Coast Guard people in Vietnam during those 10 years. And I have no reason to question that particular number. I served as a volunteer. In fact, everybody in my ship was a volunteer. And I have no regrets about that time. So my honor to all of us who served in that conflict. And my memories of all of those who are no longer with us. And that includes my captain. And that includes so many of my shipmates. One of my shipmates is still with us. That's Josh. Josh was a radarman. And he is still with us. And he goes back and forth on to and off of. He's now off of the binnacle list. Josh and I have a couple of joint projects, which we have yet to complete. So it is not time for the flag folding ceremony to be practiced for either of us. I called up the Marine traffic this morning because off of Captain's Quarters, off my deck in the federal anchorage is a bulk carrier at anchor there. And I looked her up, and she is the ALBA, A-L-B-A. She is under the Bahamas flag, and she is a bulk carrier that can hold and carry about 82,000 long tons of product. She's waiting to go alongside the bulk loading facility in Tacoma. She is light. In fact, she's so light that almost her forefoot is up out of the water. And she is not only under the Bahamas flag, but she's a relatively new ship. She was built in 2019. And interestingly enough, she is a double bottom. I'm all in favor of double-bottom ships everywhere and every type of ship. There are still many, many ships out there that are not double-bottom ships. While I was in Marine traffic, I went to the Strait of Hormuz. Now, I do not have the highest level of access. I have the mid-level access for which I pay a fee. It's not a particularly high fee, but if I were to go to the higher level, that fee would be pretty high, and it's for people who are managing fleets. For example, I can no longer go onto marine traffic and interrogate it to tell me the ownership, the insurer, the classification society to which he belongs, and all of the interlocking arrangements which so many ships have. I can't do that anymore. The marine traffic has changed their system so that I have to buy that high level of access. But what it does do is for the level of access that I do have, I get a great deal of information, and one of the things that I can do is to show where every ship which is using the Automatic Information System, AIS, where they are all over the world. And so I decided to go into the Strait of Hormuz and see what was going on. I was just amazed at how many ships there are up inside the Persian Gulf and can't get out. I didn't count them, but I will say that maybe there are 200 ships inside. And I put the cursor on one of them just to get a feel for it. And I came up with the... I'm looking for her here in my notes. Samanta, S-A-M-A-N-T-A, Samanta, a bulk carrier under the flag of, get ready for this one, because I did not know that anybody was flying under this flag, the flag of St. Kitts and Nevis. St. Kitts and Nevis. A bulk carrier that's about 20 years old, hanging on the edge of being able to continue. My guess is that the inspection regimes at St. Kitts and Nevis are not particularly strict. In any case, she is a sample of the ships that are up inside the Persian Gulf and cannot get out. So I did a little more digging about the Straits of Hormuz, and I found out that the Iranian government, Iran, of course, is the old Empire of Persia, parenthetical insertion, close parentheses, the Iranian government has set up a tolling system, and ships that are going to be allowed into the Persian Gulf, and it is a real scrum in there. It is really crowded. Boy, pilots there must be having a real time. I would like to take a really fast boat and zip in, do a fast reconnaissance on the water, do a little bit of counting, see how many ships there really are, the different flags, and then come back out without paying the toll. But that's pretty slick in that these are, parts of it are international waters, but in order to get in or out, you now have to pay a toll. And so far, according to the source that I've been able to work with, I see that there have been about 12 ships that have been allowed in and out, two or three of which are Chinese, but there are some Chinese ships that have tried to go out without paying the toll, and the Iranian government has not let them do it. So not only has this become a choke point, and a choke point to get up alongside the various oil loading and unloading facilities inside the Persian Gulf. But it's also now a revenue developer for the Iranian government. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to go back on to marine traffic more often now because I'm just fascinated by the patterns. I'm looking at my watch, and it tells me that I have come to the end of my time, and I'm really serious about not going over anymore because I don't want to be caught in the brash ice of being an overstayer. So this is, as always, all of you are in the palm of my hand. And take care of each other, especially if you are accountable for somebody else. But this is, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is your Captain Joe. I am, as always, on station and watching properly, even remotely in the Strait of Hormuz.